Welcome to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I am Pat Schlarbaum, your host for today. Thank you for listening. We have a busy Friday program. It's the days of the coronavirus phase, with many cancellations ongoing. There's a lot to think about. Yet it's with distinct pleasure to announce that on Wednesday, March 11th, a turkey vulture was sighted over Grimes, Iowa. So these harbingers of spring have returned, and it may be said they've returned in the nick of time. Spring is upon us, and the weather seems reasonable, yet cooler than it's been. Highs today near 50, and possible snow showers on Saturday with a high of 39 later in the day, so any snow won't last. And maybe some sun on Sunday and Monday with highs at 48. Thunderstorms possible later in the week. And now let's hear a report from our remarkable Dennis Hart on the Week in the News, gleaned from our Ames Tribune.
Thanks very much. I'm happy to be here on this Friday, even if it is Friday the 13th. There was plenty of news on the pages of the Ames Trib this past week. We'll start with last Friday's paper, which reported that the Iowa Board of Regents had canceled international university-sponsored travel for students, faculty, and staff at Iowa State University and other public state universities because of the coronavirus. That decision came after Iowa State University had already suspended student-sponsored spring break travel to Europe, Asia, and Africa. We'll have much more on the coronavirus in just a few minutes. There was more last Friday, including word that an FBI operation that took place earlier in the week at a house at 8th and Grand in Ames had been focused on the attempted purchase of controlled substances. The U.S. Attorney's Office said it was unaware of any specific or general threats to the public or of the existence of any dangerous materials that would create a safety risk for the public. More than 30 agents had been part of the law enforcement operation, and some had been wearing hazmat suits when they entered the home. Also last Friday, word that a Zeering man accused of killing his 62-year-old wife last November had been found not competent to stand trial. But 71-year-old Gary Pillman was said to be a candidate for evaluation and treatment. He will remain at the Iowa Medical and Classification Psychiatric Hospital in Iowa City. He's accused of stabbing his wife Betty to death. Saturday's paper brought word that representatives from the Iowa Department of Natural Resources would be holding a meeting to talk about water quality improvement plans for Hickory Grove Lake. That's the body of water about 2.5 miles southwest of Colo that was placed on the impaired waters list 2 years ago. The lake made the list after high levels of E. coli bacteria had been found. The DNR meeting will take place on Tuesday, March 24th, in the Nevada Senior Community Center. Also Saturday, a report on Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Joni Ernst's visit to Gross Wind Technologies in Slater. It was the first stop on a tour that also took her to Dallas and Greene counties. Gross Wind uses algae to clean wastewater, a process Slater is using as it improves its wastewater treatment facility to meet more stringent requirements from the State Department of Natural Resources. Saturday also brought word that a company that is focusing on serving farmers is putting down Midwestern roots by opening a laboratory in Ames. Trace Genomics is a California-based soil science company. It will take root in Ames at a nearly 12,000-square-foot facility at 615 Bell Avenue. Company officials said it would start with 5 to 7 employees in Ames who are expected to begin working there soon. And there was a story about a new district director at Hy-Vee who is now in charge of stores in Ames, Boone, and Perry. His name is John Griesenbrock. He began his career with Hy-Vee as a part-time courtesy clerk in South Dakota while he was still in high school. After college, he worked for the Hy-Vee company for several years before he opened his own store in Grand Island, Nebraska. Now he'll be working primarily out of the Lincoln Center Hy-Vee in Ames. Sunday's paper brought word that a lawsuit filed in Story County District Court 2 years ago would be argued to the Iowa Supreme Court this week. In 2018, Midwest One Bank of Iowa City filed suit against the Heartland Cooperative, seeking repayment of about $80,000 owed by Justin Harker, a farmer who owned and dried his grain at the cooperative's Cambridge location. A court ruled in favor of the bank and awarded it the amount it sought. Heartland appealed, arguing that taking the money from grain sales for the cost of drying and storage services owed to the facility has been standard industry practice for decades. Also Sunday, a report on a legislative forum held in Ames. Two Democratic state lawmakers, Senator Herman Kornbach and Representative Ross Wilburn, both from Ames, appeared at the event hosted by the League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County. About 3 dozen people showed up to hear Kornbach's and Wilburn's opinions about the current legislative session. There was also a report that Story County supervisors had set an upcoming hearing for the county budget. That will take place March 24th. The proposed budget calls for the tax levy rate to be lowered by 10 cents for both urban and rural areas. The supervisors also talked about current and upcoming projects, including construction of an animal shelter livestock building and more construction for the Tedesco Environmental Learning Center. And Sunday, word about a new art exhibit now on display at the Rainier Art Museum on the top floor of the Sheman Building at the Iowa State Center. The exhibit is called Contemplate Japan, and it features about 300 Japanese art items encompassing 200 years of Japan's art history. Included are such items as woodblock prints, bamboo baskets, kimonos, ceramics, and contemporary sculptures. Tuesday's paper brought word that the man whose body was found in a wooded area near the Furman Aquatic Center in Ames over the weekend died as the result of a suicide. Police had been called to the area northwest of the Aquatic Center complex on 13th Street. The man was an Ames resident. There was also word that companies in Ames and in Story County were among those named finalists for this year's Prometheus Awards, which recognize achievement in technology and innovation. The awards are sponsored by the Technology Association of Iowa. Winners will be announced April 9th. And there was word that an adult welding class is set to start late this month, part of a partnership between the Nevada Community School District and the Des Moines Area Community College. Classes are set to begin March 23rd and run until May 30th. Wednesday brought more word about the coronavirus. The Trib reported that at least two patients at Mary Greeley Hospital had been tested for the virus, and their results came back negative. Officials at McFarland Clinic in Ames said the clinic also had tested patients for the coronavirus, and all had come back negative. As of Wednesday, there had been no confirmed cases of the coronavirus in Story County, but again, this was as of Wednesday. Also Wednesday, word that an estimated $25 million to $30 million construction project by incoming internet service provider Metronet is scheduled to start this month in Ames, and it could wrap up by fall. The company, from Evansville, Indiana, plans to convert the former water boosting station at 1420 Lincoln Way into a utility hut that will serve as a center for fiber internet operations. Construction of the service includes installing cable underground and on overhead poles, and it will take place in various coverage areas. Metronet will be allowed to install cable underground in the public right-of-way, which is the area between the back edge of a curb and the edge of a sidewalk farthest from the street. There was more Wednesday, including word that the Story County Board of Supervisors had voted to have county staff send out a request for proposals for a new medical examiner transport service. The current contract with the funeral home ends next month. The bidding period for the proposals will end March 25th. The transport service removes and transports decedents to the office of the state medical examiner in Ankeny. There was also a report on Monday night's Ames School Board meeting when the board recognized 13 Ames High students who had been named finalists in the 65th Annual National Merit Scholarship Program. And there was word that the Diva Inside Boutique store on Main Street in Ames was going to shut down so its owners could focus on their Boone location. The Diva Inside at 311 Main would close for good sometime between now and the middle of April. The Main Street store opened 2 years ago. Thursday's Trib, yesterday's, was all about the coronavirus. The front page was completely devoted to it. Among the stories, word that Iowa State University, along with the University of Iowa and the University of Northern Iowa, had announced they would all suspend face-to-face instruction for 2 weeks after the upcoming spring break due to concerns about the coronavirus. Online instruction will take place at least from March 23rd through April 3rd. In addition, ISU announced it would limit access to athletic events on campus. A gymnastic meet, which is set to take place tonight, Friday, at Hilton Coliseum, will limit access to families and key staff members. It will not be open to the public. In addition, ISU is canceling the state high school classic track and field meet, which was set for March 16th and 17th. And ISU band members were told rehearsals and concerts were being canceled for the semester. Yesterday's Trib also reported on ISU student Natalia Rios Martinez, who returned from Italy recently, only to find out she would be quarantined at ISU's University Village to make sure that if she has the coronavirus, she could not spread it around. Every day, she is required to check her temperature twice a day and document any symptoms. There was more yesterday, including a report that Story County School Districts had announced new efforts to disinfect buildings, but that they had no plans to close schools. Now, bear in mind that all this could change, and change fast, because this is a quickly developing story, so stay tuned right here for the latest information. In other news, the Trib also reported that a proposed pilot program that would have developed a one-year pay-to-use e-scooter system in Ames failed at the Ames City Council on a 3-3 vote. Council members Gloria Betcher, Tim Garton, and David Martin voted no. The City Council had entertained the option of bringing what's called micro-mobility, which is transportation by a vehicle that weighs less than 1,100 pounds, to the city since last summer. And there was a report about Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds' visit to a Boone Town Hall meeting on Wednesday, where she praised the Invest in Iowa Act, which will increase state revenue by about $500 million. That's a proposal to raise money with a 1 cent sales tax hike and use it to have the state take over mental health funding. And that, my friends, is your summary of a busy week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart. I'll be back here on Monday with news from all around Iowa. In the meantime, with all that's going on, I'm going to try to stay as healthy as I can, and I truly hope you will too.
As long as the grass shall grow, as long as the grass shall grow, as long as the grass. Now the Seneca are an Indian tribe of the Iroquois Nation. Down on the New York, Pennsylvania line, you'll find their reservation. After the U.S. Revolution, Corn Planter was their chief. And he told the tribe they could trust these men, because that was his true belief. So he went down to Independence Hall, and there treaty signed that promised peace with the USA and Indian rights combined. George Washington gave a signature and the government gave its hand that said that now and forevermore this was Indian land. As long as the moon shall rise. Sadness now, Washington's treaty's been broken, and there ain't no hope, no how. Across the Allegheny River, they're throwing up a dam that'll flood the Indian country and be a proud day for Uncle Sam. It has broke the ancient treaty where the politicians grin. It'll drown the Indian graveyards. Corn planter, can you swim? No, the earth is mother to the Seneca, and they're trampling sacred ground. Change the good green earth to black muddy flats where honor hobbles down.
As long
as long
as the moon,
as the moon shall rise.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, for your Week in the News. And you've just heard a music interlude, As Long as the Grass Shall Grow, by Gillian Welch. So, we've had a lot of news lately. On the line is Angela Davis with the Iowa Environmental Council. Hello, Angela.
Hello, good morning.
Yes, happy to hear your voice. Well, before we go into the Environmental Lobbying Day that occurred at the Capitol on Wednesday, Tell us a little bit about the Environmental Council, if you could, please.
Sure. The Iowa Environmental Council is a member organization where several other members interested in environmentally related issues join our members, and we follow all kinds of environmental related issues, from water quality and land use to electricity or energy related issues.
And when did you start? Was it in the 1990s? 95?
That sounds correct.
95
that's
or
96?
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I just joined the Iowa Environmental Council in October of this year.
Uh-huh.
So I'm new to the team.
Well, and I certainly appreciate your strong environmental voice, Angela. Are you from Iowa?
Yes, I personally am. I grew up in Creston, Iowa, southwest Iowa.
Uh-huh.
Did a lot of traveling and living in other places of the world, and then moved back here about 10 years ago.
Okay, and welcome to the heartland, as they say. You mentioned other environmental organizations. There were quite a few in attendance on Wednesday at the Capitol. How many different organizations were represented?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. We had some great groups. Trees Forever is one of our partners, and
yes,
they were there giving the presentation as well earlier for legislators. The Iowa River Revival was also a really key partner this year in presenting information to legislators and helping to be a leader as far as speaking. But there were multiple groups.
Boy, as always,
from around the state.
Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. I ran into Joe Jack, one of
yes,
those key folks with the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation.
Yes.
Well, we gathered. It was a lobbying day. Could you give us some background on the bills that were kind of focused upon that morning?
Sure. The main one that I work with has been the governor's tax policy bill, Senate Study Bill 3116 in the House. The House number is House Study Bill 657. That's the governor's major piece of policy legislation this year. Mm-hmm. And that bill wraps in natural resources issues like funding the trust on IWIL. But it also deals with mental health funding as well and some other tax policy.
Right.
So that is our major push in the water quality side of things. I'm government relation counsel for water and land policy. So that's been our primary focus, is to encourage the governor and legislators to fund the trust and keep the integrity of the original formula intact. So there's been a lot of work that we have done to raise issues with the governor's office as well as with policymakers on how to make that the strongest piece of policy it can be.
Kind of referred to as the Invest in Iowa bill, that is kind of what the governor is calling it, I believe.
Yes, yeah. That's correct.
Suffice it to say that on your website, you can find those other bills, and that you are the Iowa Environmental Council. But one thing I was really taken with, or walked the participants through, an encounter with their legislator. How about refreshing us on that procedure for all the people that have not gone to the Capitol? And I might say that if you're not familiar with going down there for these lobbying days, it's such a wonderful facility. And yet, there are some procedures. So could you kind of walk us through what it takes to notify your legislator to come and have a talk with them?
Yes, I'd be happy to do that.
Yeah.
I spoke with the group of folks that came down for our legislative day earlier this week. Mm. And one of the things that I really focused on in that group was accessing your legislator, whether you're there in person or you're at home. You can go to the Iowa legislative webpage and look up your legislator and find out all kinds of information about your issue. So one way that is very simple on your computer is to Google Iowa legislature, and the homepage will come up, and at the very top of that main page, there are tabs, and one of them says legislators. And when you click on that, there'll be a box where you can find your legislator by putting in your home address, and it will direct you to their pages and how to get in contact with them. There are other ways, too. If you know who your representative or senator is, there are pages under that same legislator tab that will allow you to go directly to their name. And when you click on their name, it will pre-populate an email with their address. So all you have to do is fill it out. So that's a really easy way to let your legislator know that you appreciate their service and you're following what's happening at the Capitol. And if you have direct questions about a specific issue or policy or bill number, that is a very easy way to get in touch with them. The Iowa Environmental Council also, if you are on our list of grassroots organizations or members that are interested in environmental issues, can receive pre-populated emails with talking points or guidance on which legislators you should contact about specific environmental related issues. So that is one way to do it outside of the Capitol. If you're at the Capitol, do you want me to go into that?
Yes, too? If you could, please. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead and put our listener right there in the rotunda, big vacuous space. It's a lot of hubdubub going on. Yeah, take us. So I guess on the north side would be the House of Representative chambers, and you would go up to the, I guess it's the sergeant at arms, and make your request to go with your legislator, meet with them.
Yes, absolutely. On the second floor of the rotunda on either side, you have the House of Representatives. And then on the other side, just across the rotunda, is the Senate. And out front of both chambers, there are a couple of key pieces of information that can help you navigate this pretty easily. There are pictures of all the legislators organized by district. So if you're not quite sure, but you know your district, you can find your legislator in that way. And if you're not quite, you need a refresher on meeting them or someone new, the photos can be very helpful to help you identify who exactly it is that you need to speak with. But there's also a key that lists all the legislators by their last name in alphabetical order. And next to their name is a number, and that's their seat number on the floor of the chamber. So right next to all of these keys is a small table with little pads, pink pads, and you fill out your name and the seat number and the name of the legislator you want to see with the date and time, and you hand that to the sergeant at arms, and then he or she will go and try to find your legislator for you and bring them out to speak with you. So it's a pretty accessible process. We're very lucky here in Iowa that we have a citizen legislature. So we have a lot of focused individuals who want to make the state of Iowa better and really appreciate when grassroots organizations and constituents reach out to them at the Capitol.
Mm-hmm. And I recall involved with the introduction with your legislator that it's always good to maybe give them some background about yourself and why you are there, and make the strong points that you're hoping to impress upon them. How's it go with your legislature? Are they kind of receptive? Have they gotten to know you?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You're refreshing my memory about the talk I gave earlier this week, and I appreciate that so much. It's very accessible. What I was telling that group is that I just try to keep it very simple when I speak to other advocacy groups about how to access members of the legislature. And the first thing is going to introduce yourself. Most legislators are very interested in getting to know whoever is taking time out of their day to come and get to know them. And they understand that it can be a little bit of, I guess, uncomfortable or scary a little bit to introduce yourself to someone new. So typically they're very warm and inviting and encouraging, at listening to what your concerns are. So in that moment of introduction, make sure that you let them know where you're from, what you do, if you're with an organization, why they care about specific issues. Just give them a little bit of background about yourself. And then secondly, talk to them a little bit about the meat of the issue that you're there to discuss. So if you're there to talk about I Will, let's say, or ask them.
And I Will is the Iowa Water and Land Legacy legislation that is really being the keystone of our legislative outreach currently.
Exactly. Yeah. Or if you have questions about it, bring those up to the table. And most importantly, the third thing is to make sure you thank your legislator for their service. Whether you agree with their politics or their approach, it's always really appreciated to show them respect for the time that they volunteer up there. I was telling the group this week that since we have a citizen legislature, a lot of these people work in a variety of professions, from teachers to farmers to attorneys, all kinds of professions. And they are given the task of sorting through hundreds of bills each legislative session and trying to make our state better. So they're asked to spend a great amount of time meeting with people and making thoughtful decisions about what bills will become laws here in the state. So please make sure that whenever you reach out to your legislator to thank them for their service or thank them for their time, that goes a long way with them as far as building positive relationships moving forward.
Yes, and I really want to compliment you express my gratitude for all that the Iowa Environmental Council provides.
Yes, to update your listeners, there was a subcommittee, not this week we just had, but the prior week, and through the Ways and Means Committee in the Senate, Senator Jake Chapman is the chair of that subcommittee, and he appointed him of the committee itself, and he appointed himself to also serve on the subcommittee with Senator Dawson and Senator Smith. And from the Democrat side, Senators Yoakum and Senator Bolcom are also on that subcommittee. All five are excellent legislators, and they received multiple organizations from around the state to speak on the governor's Invest in Iowa bill and their thoughts about concerns with the language or whether they were in support of the initiative. And there was an outpouring of support to work on the bill. A lot of folks from the mental health realm of the world concerned with funding long-term mental health policy as well as children's mental health reform. And then there were multiple environmental groups there talking about clean water initiatives and trails and all kinds of other environmental policy-based issues. There were folks ranging from the Farm Bureau, the governor's staff was fully there in support. But then we also had folks like the Iowa Environmental Council, Ducks Unlimited, Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. The list goes on and on, the Bicycle Coalition. So there were multiple groups from around the state really emphasizing to that group of five legislative leaders the need, find the funding and find the right policy to work through these issues.
Yeah, it was really quite a showcase. And I know Pheasants Forever brought a lot of their artwork from their benefits. And it was really quite a day, and I really want to thank you, Angela Davis, with the Iowa Environmental Council. Keep up the good work, and Thanks for all you do for conservation.
Thank you so much, and you all have a wonderful day today.
Okay, thank you.
All right, bye.
Phenology is recording nature's happenings when they occur. The first bluebird of spring or the last nighthawk of autumn are noted in a journal for future reference and comparison to previous years. Today's phenology is about turkey vultures. If you've gone looking for raptors on a clear day, your heart has probably leaped and skipped a beat at the sight of a large soaring bird in the distance, perhaps an eagle or an osprey. But if it's soaring with its wings angled in a V-shape or dihedral and making wobbly circles, it's likely a turkey vulture. An eagle's wing plane is much flatter or straight, whereas the turkey vulture is V-shaped. Vultures ride thermals in the sky and use their keen sense of smell to find fresh carcasses. They are a consummate scavenger, cleaning up the countryside one bite of their hooked beak at a time and never mussing a feather on their bald heads. With a body length of 2.5 feet and a 6-foot wingspan, it is surprising that their body weight is only 2 to 4 pounds. Turkey vultures are birds of prey, like other hawks and eagles, yet their feet are weak and useless for grabbing prey. Their beaks, however, are powerful enough to rip through the hide of a dead deer or cow. They can smell carrion that's less than 12 to 24 hours old from more than a mile away. They want mammal meat as fresh as possible, preferably that of a plant-eating mammal, and will not eat extremely rotted carcasses. When searching for a meal, they often fly low over an area, using their sight and acute sense of smell to find the food. Very few birds have a sense of smell. Vultures are social feeders, which means many might join together to feed on a large carcass, with other scavenger birds, such as eagles, hawks, and crows, that might join the feast as well. Turkey vultures often are called buzzards and are found throughout much of the United States and Central and South America, although they are not really buzzards. Buzzards are hawks of the genus Buteo that live mainly in the British Isles. In some areas of our country, however, vultures are commonly called buzzards. This term was probably used by early settlers who arrived in this country, saw our vultures, and thought they were buzzards. Turkey vultures' scientific name is Cathartes aurora, which is Latin for cleansing breeze or purifier. Like all other vultures, the turkey vulture has a bald head. This is so that bits of carrion, or dead meat, do not adhere to the skin as they would to feathers. The turkey vulture often flying low to the ground to pick up the scent of ethyl mercaptan, a gas produced by the beginnings of decay in dead animals. The olfactory lobe of its brain, responsible for processing smells, is particularly large compared to that of other animals. This heightened ability to detect odors allows it to search for carrion below the forest canopy out of sight of these winged wonders. Turkey vultures play an important role in the health of our ecosystems. As nature's cleanup crews, they help eliminate rotting carcasses, which helps control the spread of certain diseases and generally helps the air smell a lot better. Due to their stomach acids, they can feed on animals that have died from such things as botulism, anthrax, salmonella, and cholera without causing the vulture to become ill. In fact, their stomach acids actually kill the bacteria and toxins. If a group of vultures consume an infected carcass, the harmful bacteria or toxin is destroyed so that it can no longer spread to other animals or humans. They have been documented killing very weak or very sick animals, but this is very rare. They are not a threat to livestock or pets. Though the vultures prefer to feed on medium to large animals such as deer or sheep, they can be found in roads feeding on roadkill animals as small as squirrels and possums. Like so many other wildlife species, turkey vultures were negatively affected by the use of the pesticide DDT in the late 1950s and 60s. Use of the chemical was banned in 1972 in North America. Today, the population is stable and even increasing for turkey vultures. 40 years ago, it was rare to discover nesting turkey vultures in hollow logs or in the second story of an abandoned farmhouse lacking windows. Today, they are common and widespread in the Americas, and evidence suggests that they are expanding their range northward. This could be because of climate change or because they are able to survive in human-altered landscapes, which may now provide them with more food sources than were present historically. A steady supply of dead pigs at a confinement animal feeding operation, or CAFO, has been added to our landscape. Vultures are one of the most misunderstood and least appreciated birds in the avian world. Many of the opinions formed by people are based on the way vultures are portrayed in movies and cartoons. Many believe that when vultures are circling overhead, they are waiting for an animal to die. Vultures certainly circle and can soar for up to 6 hours without flapping, but they are simply using the thermals to move from place to place and testing air quality for decaying carrion. If on their nest, the vultures will hiss and regurgitate, accurately hitting their target up to 6 feet away. The smell of their vomit is so bad that this defensive move is generally very successful
in driving any predators away.
Another belief that some people have is that they are dirty, disgusting birds, when in fact, if there is water source available, most vultures will enjoy a bath after a meal. Not only do vultures not pick up many food scraps on their bald head, what they do pick up will easily wash off. Adult vultures have red heads, while young of the year remain dark until their second year. Turkey vultures love to sun themselves with wings draped openly on a perch. This is called a heraldic pose. It is believed that the vulture does this for a variety of reasons. A vulture's body temperature drops overnight, and this pose will help the birds to warm up. This pose is also used after bathing to dry their feathers or dry the morning dew. It may also help to bake off bacteria the vulture has picked up while feeding on carrion. Turkey vultures roost in large groups on dead, leafless trees. Groups of perched vultures are called a wake. Individuals live in the same communal roost most of their life, and usually sleep in the same roost, in the same tree, on their particular branch, every night. Groups of vultures are called kettles when they soar upward in spirals. Kettles appear as boiling cauldrons of vultures. Hawks are known to look for kettles to find rising air for their own flight. Each spring and autumn, turkey vultures gather at traditional roosting sites each evening. The Ledges State Park, west of Ames, on the Des Moines River, is one of those destinations. This time of year, turkey vultures return as a harbinger of spring, and soon they will distribute themselves across the landscape in search of animals that have died over the winter. And that's our phenology for today about turkey vultures. This is Pat Schlarbaum with KHOI Community Radio. Go to our website, khoifm.org, and find the donate button to keep this station financially secure. Thank you. And now in the studio, we're joined with Mary Rankin, Director of Sustainability at Iowa State University. And she's brought a guest, Kaylee Bodius-Lane. Welcome to Local Talk.
Hello. Good morning, Pat. How are you? Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here.
Always a pleasure. Well, we thought, you know, Pat, we were, and we being myself and the Smart Business Challenge interns who've been on the show before. Anyway, we were talking to KHOI about a week ago because KHOI is one of our newest members to the Smart Business Challenge. And in fact, I think we're finalizing a certification for you guys. So congratulations. We're so excited about that. Mm-hmm. But when we were down here, the two Smart Business Challenge interns and I, we were mentioning things that you could take part in the community, in having a connection and a supporting role in community relations and sustainability. And we brought up the community solar project, SunSmart, that we have here in our community.
You bet.
And he started asking a few more questions, and we said, you know what? Let's bring Kaylee on the show to actually remind our community about this project. I know they've heard a lot about the project, but mm-hmm. in the middle of winter, it's hard for a lot of people to think about, mm-hmm. you know, big community solar project and investing in it, I think, because we want to see the sunshine. We want, you know, the weather to get a little warmer, and that's happening now. Mm-hmm. So we thought, what a great time to do that.
Oh, I think with the current news cycle, sustainability, well, sustainability is always important and appropriate, but particularly
I
now.
I agree so
but
strongly with that.
Particularly now, you know, it. But to learn that, you know, there are ways to tap into solar energy and where you don't have to go and get your own panels.
Yes.
You can get and you embrace this project. This is just great. I want to learn more.
Yes, exactly. And you bring up such an important point is that there is the interest and the will to want to make a difference. And sometimes, particularly with renewable energy, we say, okay, how can we really do that besides owning our own home, putting up our own structures, and those sorts of things. And so this is such a great project that allows us to do that. So Kaylee, welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So first of all, like I said, I know people have heard a lot about the community solar project, but as we now are getting into spring and we're getting really close to the project breaking ground.
Yes, we are. We're very excited.
Yeah, we are. Let's just review some of the details.
Sure.
And some of the general information. Okay. So first of all, what is the status? Remind us of the status of the project.
Right now, we are working on design and permitting for the project, and we are expecting that you'll be able to see physical progress at the site, which is just behind Sam's Club on Airport Road, in May or June.
Ooh, that is so exciting. That is,
it is.
Coming right up. Oh, my gosh. Okay, and so remind us how large of a project is this, and what is the, you know, what is the output we're going to get from the project? What can the community expect?
Sure. It's a 2-megawatt capacity solar farm, and we have power packs for community members to purchase. So anybody who is a customer of Ames Electric Services can participate in the project. If you're not a customer, you could still participate by donating to somebody who is a customer. And everybody who's participating in the project will get a credit on their electric bill for every month based on the amount of electricity that their solar panels or their share of the project produces.
So the power packs are like buying shares into the project.
Exactly.
Okay. And you mentioned, I think, a really interesting point of who's able to participate. And even if folks are, okay, so let's say we have a lot of students in town. Many of those students are renting apartments, paying their own utility bills. So they would automatically be able to join in the project.
Absolutely.
How would it work for, I'm a student and I am renting an apartment, but then I leave?
Sure. So if you move within Ames service territory, if you're still a customer of Ames Electric Services, you can move your power pack wherever you go. And there's no limit to how many times or how often you can move it. If you're moving to a new place to live, you can take your solar panel with you, your power pack. If you're moving outside of Ames Electric Services territory, we will buy your power pack back from you. So because our community is such a high percentage of students, that allows any number of the dynamic student body to participate. And when they leave town, then we'll buy it back. And then another student who's coming in the next semester has the opportunity to participate in the community solar program.
Well, I'm so impressed that we have accountants that would do that, you know, go the extra mile and make it convenient for the students, because it's just recognizing what your customers are striving for and really helping out.
Exactly. Yep. We're very excited for students to be involved if they want to be. Like Mary said, especially renewable energy can be a difficult thing to to get into, because it can feel like such a huge investment and such a long-term investment. So this is a way to make it more flexible for anybody who wants to participate.
Yeah, that's exciting. And with students making up such a big part of our community and being so enthusiastic and motivated and interested in making a sustainable difference. I mean, I see it more and more each and every day, which gives me such great joy. Now, the other option for students would be that they could donate, correct?
Absolutely. So if you wanted to participate while you live in Ames, on your own electric account, you could do that and then donate when you leave. You can donate to anybody who's a customer of Ames. electric services, and that could include churches, nonprofits, organizations, or a friend who has an electric account with us.
Right, so that's great. So you're able to continue that doing good work even after you go.
Yes, and after you donate that power pack, that's something, that's a gift that continues to have returns for whoever you're donating it for. So it provides them renewable electricity far into the future.
Great. And so that also applies then to myself as a homeowner, correct?
Absolutely.
I can do all those pieces as well.
Mm-hmm.
What I think my husband and I have invested, and obviously it's very near and dear to our hearts to commit to a renewable future through renewable energy, or sustainable future through renewable energy. But also I think that it could be a really unique piece to put on my real estate portfolio when I'm trying to sell my home.
Absolutely. If you choose to leave your power packs with a home, you can absolutely do that, and the next homeowners will benefit from that. We've also seen a lot of landlords buying power packs for properties that they rent out, and that is something that people see and that people consider when they're choosing where to live.
I think that is such a great idea, and I will definitely say that more and more, not only do we see students choosing universities and colleges based upon their commitment to sustainability and things that they're doing related to sustainability, but we also see that in where they're choosing to live and being interested in what a particular property management group is doing to be more sustainable.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's just back up for just a little bit. I think it's probably pretty obvious to our listeners why we consider this a community solar project rather than just a renewable energy source that a city government offers. But can we just tease that out?
Sure. So this is specifically a community solar project because the city does not own this project. The community, the aggregation of all of the people who are participating, are the owners of this project. They're funding this effort, and they are the ones that have asked for this, and they're the ones we're serving with this project.
And that's really unique from a standpoint of other communities will have maybe solar arrays, those sorts of things, but it's not necessarily community owned.
Correct.
So how many, do you know off the top of your head, how many similar projects in the state of Iowa?
Sure. I don't know exactly how many. I know that our project is roughly modeled after Cedar Falls Utilities.
Sure.
And they helped us a lot in figuring out along every step how you can do this and how you can make it work the best that we possibly can for the community. There are several other solar arrays in Iowa, but like you said, a lot of them are not community-owned like this one.
Yeah, so I think that just connects you as a community member that much more, I don't know, strongly and intimately to the carbon footprint of your community, to the sustainability future of your community. That's great. And even around the country, I was just looking at a map, you know, so my extensive research, but I was just looking at a map online, and it appears that the majority of projects are more a city owns a renewable project. And certainly that adds to the, you know, renewable footprint of that community and the commitment to sustainability. But I think that the commitment of really connecting the community to owning their projects and all that goes into it really offers us a fairly unique position in our community.
Absolutely, I agree.
And so if we then, so the other piece of the puzzle is that I could, as a homeowner, install my own solar panels, right, on my roof. So mm-hmm. Can we talk a little bit about the options and the differences between doing the two? It's probably somewhat obvious, but I think there are things that people oftentimes don't think about.
Sure. If you are thinking about installing your own solar panels, renewable energy capacity on your home, that's great, and we would never want to discourage
that. Of course.
But some homeowners find that there are a lot of challenges with that. There's a lot of time input that they need to invest in understanding what system they want and making sure that all of the pieces fit together. And for some people, that might require some costly upgrades to their roof, or maybe they don't have a roof that faces south.
Right.
Or maybe they don't own their home and can't put solar panels on the roof. So for people in that situation, This is a more flexible option. All the work has been done for you. We have the contractor. We're building the farm. We'll manage the farm on your behalf, and all you have to do is buy your share and enjoy the renewable electricity and the credit that will come through on your electric bill.
Most definitely. And you don't have the maintenance. You don't have to worry about all those things that might happen with the crazy weather that we're having more and more and those sorts of things. And that also goes for a business, a nonprofit, faith-based organization, so on and so on, correct?
Absolutely. And for commercial customers who commit 1% or more of their electric usage in SunSmart, we're offering special advertising where we'll have their logo on a sign at the solar farm on our website, and we'll have special plaques or window clings, whichever they prefer, to put in their place of business.
That's exciting. That's great. And so just there's still opportunity to get involved, right? I want to make sure I mention that.
Yes, there is. You can find a purchase form and all of the information about the solar farm, including all of the details, at cityofames.org/solar. And all of the instructions to get that form to us are on the form itself.
Well, thank you so much, Kaylee and Mary. Thank you so much for such an exciting project.
Thank you for having us here to talk a little bit more about it.
You guys are the best.
It's exciting. Everybody get out and get those solar packs purchased.
Yeah. Hey, but Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 5 p.m. on Fridays here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. And remember that you can also hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. This program is engineered by Paul Hertz. Thank you, Paul. And I've been your host, Pat Schlarbaum. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard As Long as the Grass Shall Grow, a Johnny Cash tune by Gillian Welch. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you would like to try, your hand at reporting will train you. Come and join the Local Talk team. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.